Hey guys, Rose 420 here. How is everybody tonight? I am procrastinating on homework, so you have another episode coming at you for the OJ case right now. So go grab your weed, grab your wine, and let's dive in to this true crime. Hey guys, welcome to part 5 of the OJ case. So we will be getting into the defense. And the defense pretty much has creates reasonable doubt for everything I went over in the prosecution's case. So if you haven't listened to any other parts, I at least suggest you go back, listen to part 4 so you know what the prosecution already set up before OJ's dream team, as they get referred to, because they're some of the best lawyers, headed by Robert Shapiro initially, and then famously Johnny Cochran took over this case. So we're going to get into all of that. But first, let's get down to business. I know that was frightening. I won't do it again. First, before I get into the strain of the day, we got social media! Woohoo! Social media! Okay, it's really not that exciting, but I will post funny things and announcements there and updates. So, like, on Twitter tonight, I put this episode will be coming out, and on Instagram. So you could find us under Weed, Wine, and True Crime. My handle for Twitter is Rose420. The O in Rose is a 0. So R0SE420. 420 the digits. And on Instagram, my handle is Weed, Wine, and True. So close to the name. Okay. So the strain of the day is Pineapple Express. And I wish James Franco wasn't such a creeper so I could still love that movie. I do still love that movie, I won't lie, but honestly, James Franco being a creeper really did not shock me. I have a cousin who met him once and said she is beautiful, like model beautiful, and she said he was a douche, and I believe it. So probably not on the level of OJ, but close. So anyways, we are smoking Pineapple Express. I give it a 9 out of 10 leaves because the flavor is great. I get super stoned. I like the buzz it gives me. It's like a nice, happy, energetic, but chill high, if that makes sense. Like no anxiety. So I really enjoy it. I'm also smoking concentrate in the form of diamonds still. And I have my Pinot Grigio. So go get your bong, bowl, blunt, joint, vape, dab pen, dab rig. Okay, I'm out of things to say. Hookah, there you go. And grab your wine or your cocktail of choice. I support all cocktails. I don't drink all cocktails, but I support all of them. And let's get into the defense's case. Oh, and on a side note, I'm going to try and do this in one take. So if I stumble and stuff, please ignore it. But I've noticed that sometimes when I do multiple parts on a podcast, part of it doesn't get uploaded for a while to Apple Podcasts specifically for some reason, and Spotify, even though the app I use is through Spotify. So like the last episode was supposed to be 47 minutes. I hope everybody heard all 47 minutes, but when I look at it, it only says 22 for some reason. Anyways, now I'm going to get into the defense, but I needed to warn you in case anything happened. Okay, so we'll get into the dream team. So Juice the Douche hires really, really, really well-known lawyers who are known for being sharks and defending people and getting people off. So, as I said, it's initially led by Robert Shapiro. He was a civil lawyer, and he used to settle a lot, but he gets replaced. So Johnny Cochran comes in his place. And he's known for, and this is important, police brutality in civil rights cases. Because remember, I said there's a lot of racial divide and unrest right now. The Rodney King, I know I keep bringing that up. You could probably make a drinking game to how many times I say his name. But he is such an integral part of why this trial played out the way it did. Why Johnny Cochran had the ammo he did. But he uses Rodney King and the racial unrest and everything to fuel the thoughts that the police didn't handle this case correctly. Now, I'm not saying the LAPD isn't racist or corrupt, because they are, but I think OJ did it. I think him and his son did it together. That will be next week's, because this is quite a bit to delve into. So there's going to be like a million parts to this, and I'm sorry, but just roll with the punches with me, people. I promise it's getting better. I got social media. Oh, and I want to say, by the way, the few fans I have interacted with, you girls are awesome. I'm so happy you listen to my podcast. Just so shout out to all you guys. Love talking to you. Okay. So Johnny Cochran is put in charge of this. Now, the team includes F. Lee Bailey, Robert Kardashian, yes, that Kardashian family, you just can't escape, a Harvard appeals lawyer, Alan Dershowitz, a student intern, Robert Blasier, and Dean of Santa Clara University of Law, Gerald Uelman. I hope I said that right. I'm not sure if I did. So, assisting Cochran, there was Carly Douglas and Sean Holly. Barry Sheck and Peter Newfield were also hired. And they were, at the time, leading the Innocence Project. If you don't know what that is, it is to help people of color who are innocent of the crimes they are convicted of get out of jail, to look into their cases. It also helps white people, but people of color tend to be placed in jail more often incorrectly than white people. So, yeah. So the Innocence Project is awesome. If you know anything, you know Kim has helped out people like the Innocence Project and the Innocence Project by getting people to look at certain cases. Her most famous is Cyntoia Brown. So that was a girl who was a prostitute and killed a guy who was a John, but she did it in self-defense, but she was sentenced to life. And yeah, she's very, I'm sure you've heard the case. She's very interesting, actually. I should probably do a podcast on that. See how my random ramblings that have nothing to do with anything we're talking about lead somewhere for me? Okay, so off that tangent and back to what's happening. So they work for the Innocence Project and they specialized in DNA evidence. The Dream Team is estimated to have cost between $3 million and $6 million. So, yeah. I don't want to say money buys you freedom, because I'm not saying people were bribed, but money buys you a defense that makes it possible for freedom. I am sorry if you are a public defender, but we all know public defenders are overloaded with cases. They can't, like, delve deep, like, so yeah, so we know that this is why they call it the Dream Team, right? Because OJ is paying $3 to $6 million, which if your life and your freedom's at stake and you have it, $3 to $6 million probably doesn't seem that crazy. So in comparison, though, I need to point this out because it is a fact of the case. And I'm not saying they didn't deserve what they got, but Marsha really messed up this case. So I don't know that they did, but the prosecution cost the taxpayers over $9 million U.S. dollars. I'm specifying U.S. because I do have listeners around the world. Hey, guys, I actually see your countries on my analysis of who's listening, and it blows my mind all the countries we're reaching. All right. There's a love of weed all over the world, and I love it. Okay. All right. So, like I said, the defense is setting up not to prove that OJ is completely innocent, but to at least implant there is reasonable doubt. And they summarize that theory by saying it was the evidence was compromised, contaminated, and corrupted. And this is said in the opening statements. They said that Dennis Fung and Andrea Mazzola, who collected the evidence, mishandled and compromised the DNA evidence that is held against OJ. I think the DNA evidence, especially mixed in with Nicole and Ron Goldman's, if you remember last week, I said that, you know, in the Bronco, their DNA was found mixed together and blood and all that. I think that's pretty damning because how could you mess it up? And it's just the two murder victims and the suspect. You know what I mean? Like, if they messed it up, wouldn't it be, like, completely contaminated and, like, probably have some of their DNA in it or something? You know what I'm saying? Like, devil's advocate, they could have messed it up. I was not standing there. I do not think they did. But this is in the argument for reasonable doubt. So they go with that, and they say that the actual murderer had different DNA, and it vanished and wasn't there, and that the LAPD crime lab contaminated all the evidence, and this lab is run by Colin Yamauchi? Okay, that's the last way I'm saying it. I'll just call him Call Dog from now on. So, they say that OJ's reference vial for his DNA was transferred into all of the exhibits. So, they're saying that Call Dog mishandled this and his lab, and the comparison sample they took from OJ was mishandled and got into all of the exhibits, and that's why his DNA is there. And then corruption is their last argument. Listen, Linda, I know the LAPD is corrupt. I'm not saying they're not. That's probably why it was so easy to convince the jury. But I don't think they planted the remaining three exhibits. But that was the defense's argument, that the evidence was planted to make OJ look guilty. Now, what I want to remind everybody of once again is OJ is a beloved sports hero, actor, all these things in America up until this trial. So why would the police have something against him? Johnny Cochran says it's because of race. I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think the LAPD was planting stuff on O.J. Simpson. I think they were planting it on the innocent black people on the street when they were doing it. That the poor black people, not O.J., who was beloved around the world and this great football player, and you know, so I'm not saying they aren't racist or corrupt, because I definitely think they are. I don't think that was the case with OJ due to his stature and, you know, who he was. Who you are plays a huge part into the treatment you get in the world. So, like, I am a short white female. So when I get pulled over by the cops, I'm usually not scared for my life. Now, I also drive a nicer car. It's new. I don't get pulled over. I see people and beat up cars get pulled over a lot and probably treated way differently than if I did. Or, you know, people of color obviously are scared for their lives when the police come. So who you are plays a huge role into it. And like, yes, OJ is black. I'm not saying he's not, even though I think he said he wasn't black. He's just OJ. You know, Jay-Z made the whole song about it, because what does that even freaking mean? Like, what does that fucking mean, OJ? You're a douche is what you are. You're not black. You're a douche. But he is black. I'm not saying he's not black. But so, yeah. So that's what they're saying. It was corrupt. They planted it. He's black. Okay. So the timeline I laid out last time also gets called into question. And the defense says, oh, no, 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 bitch. Oh, no, 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 Marsha girl. The murders happened around 11. Your whole timeline don't make sense, girl. But does it make sense or does it not? Let's get into the rest of their case, because this, I've been droning on about just the theory. Okay, so here's everything with the timeline. So, I'm not going to say this right. Dr. Robert Huizenga came and testified in 95 on the 14th of July. And he said OJ has arthritis. He has old football injuries. He wouldn't be physically able to murder two people in such a brutal way. He doesn't have the physical capacity for it. Now, I just want to point out, OJ beat the shit out of Nicole many times, and there are pictures to prove it. So I'm not thinking he's some weakling in the corner. Like, yeah, he probably does have old football injuries that hurt sometimes, but he was also very strong. And I don't know about his arthritis status beyond the doctor saying it. I have no reason to think this doctor would lie, but I don't know. I think that argument is bullshit. Bullshit alarm. Bull, 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 bull. Like, okay. So, when they cross-examine, the prosecution shows a video that Juice the Douche made, and it's titled OJ's Minimum Maintenance Fitness for Men. So, defense is arguing that he's arthritic, has all these old injuries. He couldn't have possibly carried out these crimes, right? So then the prosecution, Marsha's like, okay, hang on one second. I have a videotape he recorded a few weeks before the murders, and it's him working out. So after all this comes out, Dr. Bobby, that's what I'm going to call him, Dr. Bobby, because I can't say his last name, I don't think. So Dr. Bobby says if OJ had an adrenaline rush, you know, adrenaline is a hell of a drug. Like, moms lift cars off of people, you know, it's crazy. So after the prosecution shows the video, the doctor says if he had adrenaline, he could have possibly committed the murders. So next, the defense brings a forensic pathologist that says, you know, these murders didn't happen when they think they did. They happened closer to 11 p.m. His name is Michael Baden. And as we know, if it happened at 11 p.m., people saw OJ then, Juice the Douche then. So, like, he couldn't have been off hacking people up. But I don't think that the original timeline is off at all. So, I mean, I'm not a forensic pathologist, to be fair. So I have no idea. I haven't personally looked at the evidence. And I don't even know what I'd be looking for to determine time of death, because that's not my thing. But I don't think they fucked up the timeline so bad on when she died that they totally screwed up the time of death. So he also states that Nicole was conscious, and after her throat was cut, she took a step and was standing. And that Ron would have been fighting with whoever murdered them for at least 10 minutes with a cut jugular vein. Okay, if you have ever seen movies when their throat gets sliced, if you hit the jugular vein, I'm not going to say it's exactly like in movies, but blood is rushing out, right? So, like, maybe he got adrenaline, which is bad if blood is rushing out because it makes your heart pump faster, but that's not the point, and was fighting. But do you really think a woman with her throat so badly slit, it looked like she was almost decapitated, and a guy with his jugular vein were able to fight, his jugular vein cut, were able to fight back with any strength or for any length of time? I think that's crazy. I'm not a doctor. I don't know. I've said that a million times. I want people to trust me, but I am not a doctor. But, okay, so does that seem fishy to anybody else? I mean, her body was brutalized. So even if she did live and take a step, what does that mean exactly? That it was okay? That it wasn't OJ? I just, whoever hurt them was in a state of rage and had no reason to hurt them. Well, they may have thought they had a reason to hurt them, but they had no reason to hurt them. So I think that still points to OJ. He has the motive. He has the emotions. He has the inability to control his anger. So, yeah. So that's next. So while he is testifying, Dr. Michael Baden admits that Ron Goldman's long struggle couldn't have been accurate. Like I said, I didn't want to give that away, but like I said, like, if you think about it, do you think with your jugular vein cut, which means you can't breathe because you're pretty much drowning in your own blood, not to be gory, but this is a true crime show, so I mean, it's kind of what you signed up for, that you're fighting people, you can't even breathe. So anyway, this dude is like, oops, I made an oopsie, it was inaccurate. So people say that he purposely lied to collect a $1,000 retainer, and I could see it, but that $100,000. Did I say that? Okay, so $100,000. Like, I could see that. That's a lot of freaking money. And some people are motivated by money. A lot of people are. A lot of people would sell their own soul for money and material things. So do I think it's impossible that happened? No. So critics bring this up. It's looked at as bad. Like, they are paying people to testify, which, that's what it looks like to me. They're paying people, they're paying experts exorbitant amounts of money because OJ can to, you know, testify things that aren't true. Now, let's all remember, OJ is paying all this money and then goes on later in his life to rob his own memorabilia and stuff from somebody because he has no money. So karma is in fact a bitch, bro, and he ended up in prison, even though he's out now, which makes me want to vomit in my mouth a little bit, but whatever. So they admit that Goldman's blood was in Simpson's Bronco and that Ron would have never been in that Bronco in his entire lifetime. He never had an opportunity to, like, him and OJ were not friends, so yes. So, if you remember, I said part of the dream team was Barry Scheck and Peter Neufeld, and they were DNA experts, and they worked for the Innocent Project, and they said the DNA was not reliable in this case because, quote-unquote, it was sloppy in its collecting methods, and they didn't preserve it correctly. So Fung and Mazzola, if you remember, the people who run the lab, admit that they say, hey, we made a lot of mistakes during the collection, which, this is a big deal, includes not changing gloves between handling evidence items. Now, a glove can move somebody's DNA from one item to another. Do I think it develops blood in places? No. Did they do a lackadaisical job? Yeah, they did. They didn't do it correctly. They admit it. But it sucks because it affects the whole way this case is looked at. So they say they stored them in plastic bags instead of paper, like it's recommended. And it was in a van that wasn't refrigerated for many hours after they got it. So basically, they fucked up everything they pretty much could have with the DNA evidence. Now, I think the blood evidence is very damning. I think the motive is very damning. I think a lot of other things are very damning. But these people really should not have been in charge of a lab. They really fucked this evidence right in the booty hole. Like, I don't even know what they did with it. I could have handled it better, and I was 7 at the time. I was 6. Like, this is terrible. So the defense says, oh, you kept it not refrigerated, blah, blah, blah. Bacteria could degrade all the real murder's DNA. And there's cross-contamination, and you guys touched these things. So, yeah, the defense jumps on how terribly they did. Now, the prosecution, of course, argues that the mistakes made in the lab did not affect the evidence at all. And that most of the evidence samples were testable and the DNA was done at 2 different labs. So it's not just the crime lab where the LAPD crime lab where Fung and Mazzola were working and all the contamination supposedly happened. So they have sent the DNA results to get tested somewhere else too, in case something like this popped up. So they go on to say that they don't only show. Okay, so Marcia Clark called this a big smokescreen. I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought on that last sentence. Marcia Clark calls it a smokescreen, and you know what? Not, but like, I have to be fair and look at this as not biasly as I can, even though I went into this thinking OJ's guilty. I'll be totally honest with you guys. I did. But they really did fuck up at the LAPD lab, and that's something they really needed to look at because, you know, people get screwed over because of stuff like this. DNA evidence usually is pretty damning. When juries hear, oh, we found your DNA on, in, around this person who was murdered, you know, that makes their ears perk up. So, because DNA, like I read to you, it's usually like 1 in 9 billion chances of it being, like, it's very accurate. So Dr. John Gerds is the one who brought up all this contamination, and he's a microbiologist. So he goes on to testify in August, it's the second, still in 1995, that the matching, not at all reliable. They fucked it up. It was contaminated. It wasn't reliable. His quote is, the LAPD crime lab has a substantial contamination problem. It is chronic in the sense that it does not go away. So, you know, they fucked up other cases too. I'm not going to get into all of them now. We could, but I'm not going to because that would take the rest of the time I'm going to use to discuss the defense. And people knew it, and so he testified this, and people had no problem believing it. And he testifies this because of their history, that he wouldn't say any of their DNA testing was reliable. If it was carried out by the LAPD, he was basically saying it's not reliable because that lab always fucks up, they're always ruining things, they're always contaminating things, they don't follow procedure. So, yeah, so he's basically just saying the whole LAPD lab is not reliable, which, you know, after them testifying all the things they did wrong, I'm going to have to agree with him. Am I saying they fucked up every case and we should never trust them? No, but I think new people should have been in charge of the lab. At least you should switch some things up, maybe go over policy on how to test DNA again. I don't know. But, so yeah, so it's not hard for people to believe. So, Gerds goes on to say that he only believed three of the DNA matches were valid. And these three, ironically, were the same ones the defense was saying were planted by the police. So, prosecution, old Marsha goes to cross-examine Dr. Gerds. And he goes on to say there's no evidence that cross-contamination occurred. Sorry, I had to do it and I didn't want to stop a take. He was testifying what might have occurred, not what actually did, he said. He said that the blood in the Bronco and OJ's blood in the Bronco was not due to contamination. He also said that nothing happened during the packaging and shipping that could possibly affect the validity of the results at the two labs, both of them. So the DNA thing is damning. The fact that they fucked up and admitted it is damning. But the prosecution implies that Dr. Gerds isn't even credible. He has no forensic experience. He's only a microbiologist. He's actually the one that's not reliable. And he'd only testified for criminal defendants. And he always said the DNA evidence wasn't reliable because of contamination. So, like he said about the chronic contamination at the lab, because it doesn't go away, he's chronically defending criminals because he doesn't go away. So, screw this guy. He's an asshole, but whatever. Marsha also goes on to imply that it's not coincidence that the three items that were planted, I'm using air quotes even though you can't see me, planted by the police. I'll use a weird voice and inflection, I guess, to signify air quotes. I don't know what just happened there. Okay, so she says the same thing I said, that of course they admit some of it's good, but that's what was planted. And then all 58 others were false positives. So, and then the 47 others were contaminated with the comparison evidence, and they're all false negatives, and that would be crazy. So the defense brings DNA expert Dr. Henry Lee, who testified on August 24th, and he said that Dr. Gerds' claims were highly improbable. So obviously this guy is on the payroll too. So Dennis Fung, the lab dude, goes on, the lab dude, I'm very professional, as you could tell, goes on to get cross-examined by Barry Shack, and the media surrounds this because the LAPD fucked up. That was a big thing then, and it was all starting to fall apart. So the police conspiracy allegation. So then the defense goes on to say, there's this conspiracy and the police planted evidence and all the blood evidence and, you know, the DNA wasn't right. And they said that the prisoners, Dennis Fung, Andrea Mazzolo, Kyle Dogg, all of them were participating. Everybody, the LAPD, everybody was just participating in this huge plot to frame OJ. Why? Why would people do that? There's no fucking reason people would do that. It is an insane argument. But the racial tensions due to what police were doing and are still doing to people of color really helped play into, yeah, he probably did. They probably all are plotting against OJ just because they want to keep black men down, which I'm not saying people don't. I just don't think that was the case here. As I pointed out, Black Lives Matter. I support that 100%. I support the protests. I support all of it. I'm just saying in this case, I don't think that was the issue. So now on to the physical evidence. The only evidence brought up by the defense was the evidence that they say the police used to try and frame OJ. And that two of 108 DNA evidence samples were tested in the case, and they had EDTA, which is an acid. I'm not going to try and pronounce it. Okay, I'll do it. I'll see what I could do. Ethylene diamine tartaric acid. There you go. There's my attempt at it. Please do not unfollow me. I know that was ugly. So the defense says that a drop of blood towards the back gate near Bundy Street. Remember, I always bring up how it's crazy. Ted Bundy, it creeps me out. I hate seeing Bundy in this case every time. That matched Simpson and was on a pair of socks in his bedroom and had Nicole's blood on it too. We're all planted there by the police. Why would the police do this? Nobody knows, but that's what they're saying. So in order to support this claim, Johnny Cochran and the Dream Team pointed to the presence of EDTA. I'm not trying to say it again. I am not trying to say it again at all. So on July 24th, 1995, Dr. Frederick Reuters, he's a forensic toxicologist, so he's actually working in forensics, unlike the other asshole doctor who testified and only testified for criminals to say their evidence, their DNA evidence wasn't reliable. He said that there were results that were analyzed by an FBI special agent, Roger Martz, and testified that ETA in the evidence samples was higher than what is normally found in blood. And so they're saying this was cross-contamination. So Marcia Clark, Marcia gets up to cross-examine Dr. Reuters, I don't know, to read out loud a portion of the EPA article and point out what they stated the EDTA levels in blood should be. And by reading it out loud, it proved he misread it and that the EDTA in the samples were actually consistent and it wasn't contaminated. So then the doctor claims it was a typo and claims that he's not wrong. So then the prosecution gives a direct copy from the EPA, and yeah, he falls apart. So, and then he admitted that it can be found in food, especially McDonald's, which doesn't shock me. McDonald's is fucking gross. Blech. Okay. And OJ had eaten McDonald's earlier that night with Kato Kaelin, you know, the dude in the guest house. So that could be why the levels were a little bit higher. So the FBI special agent, Robert Martz, got called by the defense. July 25th, 1995, he testifies. So he says that he did not identify EDTA in the blood. So that totally contradicts the whole testimony given the day before by the other doctor. He said the blood samples responded like EDTA and was consistent with the presence, but it wasn't EDTA. I don't really know what that means. So, like, it responded like EDTA. So it looks like a duck. It quacks like a duck. It must be a fucking duck, right? Well, apparently not. So then the defense says that this witness is changing his demeanor to favor the prosecution. And so he states in direct quote, "I cannot be entirely truthful by only giving yes and no answers." So Martz wasn't lying. So he was being honest, and it didn't turn out the way that the defense wanted. So he says it's impossible to ascertain if EDTA was in there, and he tested his own unpreserved blood and got the same EDTA results. I swear to God, one day I'll be able to say that acronym, EDTA. It's harder than the actual name, I think. And he said that the defense had jumped to conclusions. And, quote, those blood stains did not come from preserved blood. So they couldn't have been planted because it wasn't preserved blood. It was fresh. So, okay, guys. I know you're going to kill me, but we're going to have to pick up again tomorrow because, honestly, we're 40 minutes into it. This is going to cut me off before I finish what we're talking about right now. You know what? I'll get into the Bronco with you guys, or the back gate with you guys. So, like I said, the back gate's on Bundy Street. Good old Ted Bundy, Theodore Bunzers. I don't know what's wrong with me. Help me, I am fucking weird. And there is blood on the back gate, and it was collected on July 3rd, 1995, not the date of the murders, which you will, or, well, the day after the murders, when Nicole and Ron are discovered. You will remember that is June 13th when they originally start taking it. So, the DNA volume in that blood was significantly higher than any other blood evidence that they collected on the 13th. DNA volume was so high, the defense says, it couldn't have been explained by contamination, but it's really, they brought up how weird it is that this has more DNA than other samples collected, and it was outside longer, so how is that possible? The elements would have affected it. It wasn't out for just a couple days. It was several weeks, and it had maybe even been washed. So on March 20th, 1995, there's testimony that Fung was instructed to collect the blood on the gate on June 13th. Later, Fung, his name should be Fuckhead because he seems like the worst scientist ever. He admits later, oh, I just didn't do it. Sorry, I know it's a murder case, but I didn't feel like it. So that's not what he said, but that's what I imagine went down. And then he's like, and I'm also too lazy to change my gloves between testing DNA. Oh my God. Fung you. Hehe. I'm so immature. I don't know what's wrong with me. So, obviously, the Dream Team says Fung you did not collect the blood that day because it wasn't there. It was not there. They planted it, and that's why the DNA is so high. And so, Sheck from the Dream Team, which you'll remember, Innocent Project DNA, blew up a picture of the back gate on Bundy Street, Theodore Bun Buns. Bun Buns. Okay, I'm done. And maybe if I wasn't so weird, we could have gotten through this whole defense case in one part. Okay, so anyways, they say that it wasn't there. The photograph, they have the photograph blown up and nobody can see it in the photograph. So Marsha comes back and shows a different photograph that showed blood was present on the gate on June 13th. And that the first officer to the crime scene was the one who pointed out the blood on the back gate to Furman. And Furman documented it in his notes. And then many other officers under oath testified that there was blood there. So I'm leaning towards there was blood there. I think there was blood there. So that's where I'm going to cut it. We'll get back to the famous Bronco in the next part, which I'll probably do over the next couple days. So yeah, I hope this was enjoyable for everybody. I'm having fun delving into this case again, even though it's been done a few times. I always like to relook at the information. So make sure you share us with your friends. If you're digging this podcast, rate us on whatever platform you're using to listen to us so we're easier to find. And follow us on social media. So that's Twitter, Rose420, R0SE, numbers 420. And on Instagram, Weed, Wine, and True. And you could look for Weed, Wine, and True Crime on both, and we should pop up. So, yeah, I love talking to you guys, so get at me on there. And I will see you for the next part. Peace and love, everybody.